Our Heavenly Father, it was our great President, Abraham Lincoln, who said in 1863, "It is the duty of nations as well as men to own their dependence upon the overruling power of God and to confess their sins and transgressions in humble sorrow, yet with assured hope that genuine repentance will lead to mercy and pardon, and to recognize this sublime truth in the Holy Scriptures and proven by all of history, that nations only are blessed whose God is the Lord." Unquote. Help our beloved nation, the United States of America, our city, and each of our citizens to turn once again to God. For in so doing, we will find God's will for each of our lives. We will find the guidance of God for our conduct. God's standards will become our ethics, and God's help will cause us to walk in His ways and keep His commandments. So today we once again boldly affirm our national motto, "In God We Trust." May Your eternal presence be mightily evident in our city council meeting tonight. May our mayor and her colleagues and their support staff earnestly seek Your divine will as they consider each item on the agenda. Grant that understanding far beyond their normal intellect will be graciously granted to them from God as they concern themselves with the current and future needs of our city, its citizens, and our guests. We invoke Your blessings upon each of them as they strive to serve us and make proper decisions that will benefit our beautiful city. Thank You that we are privileged to live here in Pismo Beach, the gem of the central coast of California. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Will you please place your hand over your heart and repeat after me? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jones. Okay, the next item on our agenda is presentations, and we have three proclamations this evening. The first is for National Police Week. Mayor Pro Tem?
A proclamation proclaiming May 15th, 2006, as National Police Week. Whereas Congress and the President of the United States has designated May 15th as Peace Officers Memorial Day and the week in which May 15th falls as National Police Week. And whereas the members of the Pismo Beach Police Department play an intricate role in safeguarding the rights and freedom of the city of Pismo Beach. And whereas it is important that all citizens know and understand the duties, responsibilities, hazards, and sacrifices of their law enforcement agency, and that members of our law enforcement agency recognize their duty to serve the people in the community by safeguarding life, property, by protecting them against violence and disorder, and by protecting the innocent against deception and the weak against oppression. And whereas the men and women of the City of Pismo Beach Police Department unceasingly provide a vital public service. Now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach do hereby proclaim May 14th through May 20th, 2006, as Police Week in the City of Pismo Beach in honor of our law enforcement officers, past and present, who have rendered a dedicated service to the community, and to further proclaim May 15th, 2006, as Peace Officers Memorial Day in honor of those law enforcement officers who, through their courageous deeds, have made the ultimate sacrifice in service to their community and have become disabled in the performance of duty. Dated the 16th day of May, 2006, and signed by our Mayor, Mary Ann Reese.
Thank you. Would the police chief please meet me at the podium?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
The timing couldn't be better. Tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the pier, we are hosting the countywide Peace Officer Memorial Service. This year in the state of California, between May and April, May of last year and April of this year, there were 17 peace officers killed in California. That's an extraordinarily high number. We intend to honor those as well as the local officers throughout the years that have been killed within San Luis Obispo County. This past year we lost...
And whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as water, sewers, streets and highways, public buildings, and solid waste collection. And whereas the health, safety, and comfort of this community greatly depends on these facilities and services. And whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skill of public works officials. And whereas the efficiency of the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff public works departments is materially influenced by the people's attitude and understanding of the importance of the work they perform. Now, therefore, the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach does hereby proclaim the week of May 21 through the 27th, 2006, as National Public Works Week in the City of Pismo Beach and calls upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which public works officials make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. Dated the 16th day of May 2006, signed by Mayor Mary Ann Reese.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Would Dennis meet me at the podium? It's my pleasure to present this to you and recognize all the good work done by our public works agencies and yourself as engineer for the City of Pismo Beach.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Would you like to say a few words?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mayor Reese, Mayor Pro Tem, and council members. This is a very nice proclamation, and our staff of approximately 30 people really appreciate it. And I would say we especially appreciate the strong support and encouragement that this council, mayor and council, always provides to our public works and engineering staff. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, the next presentation is a proclamation for Arbor Day. Councilman Rabinow.
Thank you, Mayor Reese. 2006 Arbor Day Proclamation. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees, and whereas this holiday, called Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than a million trees in Nebraska, and whereas 2006 is the 134th anniversary of the holiday, and Arbor Day is now being observed throughout the nation and the world. And whereas trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil by wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce life-giving oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. And whereas trees are a renewable resource, giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and beautify our community. And whereas trees, wherever they are planted, are a source of joy and spiritual renewal. Now, therefore, let this 16th day of May 2006 be proclaimed the 134th anniversary celebration of Arbor Day in the City of Pismo Beach, dated the 16th of May 2006, and signed by our mayor, Mary Ann Reese.
Thank you very much. And who will receive this? Okay.
Thank you. One thing about this proclamation, this allows us to apply for Tree City USA through the National Arbor Day Foundation. And we've applied for this for probably more than 10 years, and we've been awarded every year. It's an application that you have to identify an inventory of the trees you have in town, the cost, the city costs associated with that. We've been applying over the years, so we have a database that we work from. But this will allow us to go forward and be Tree City USA again. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next item on our agenda is public comment period. I will remind you that you have 3 minutes and 3 minutes only, and please direct all your comments to all of the council, not just one or two. Thank you very much. And the first person I have a card for is Don Lanier.
To vacate. We did not receive a 6 months notice, nor did we receive any type of relocation package. Matter of fact, the property management company told us that they didn't even have any property available for us to rent. We kind of feel like we're kind of being ran out, kind of bullied around. We have till July 17th to leave. Well, they just gave us a notice saying they're shutting off our cable June 15th, 1 month before they even before we have to leave, so we'll be without cable for a whole month. They also said we have in all of our front doors, we have real nice kind of like stained glass windows with beach themes. They're going to come and take those out immediately and board it up. Just board the windows up, not even replace it with glass. I've been there 3 years. The other tenants have been there up to 7 years. We've been great tenants, pay our rent on time. We keep everything intact and feel kind of disrespected, a little, kind of slapped around a little bit. What we would like to know is what the owners plan on doing with this property, because if they're going to build a hotel or demo it, they were required to provide us with this package, and now all of a sudden we get 60 days notice just to leave, and we kind of like wondering what's going on with the owners. Why are they doing this to us?
I don't know if there was any conditions to the development on this. Do you want to respond to that?
I can follow up on this issue. Where the project is right now is the Coastal Commission has internally appealed that project in relationship to a seawall issue on the project. So it hasn't been approved at the Coastal Commission level yet. But I'll follow up on the noticing issue on that.
We'll have our staff look into that and see if there's anything they can do to help you. So I will give him your card. It has your phone number on it?
Actually, no, it doesn't.
If you want to give it to him?
Yes.
As you can say, if Mr. Lanier could make sure he leaves us his phone number or how we can contact him so we can get back to him.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention. We'll see if there's anything that the staff can do.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. The next card I have is Greg Barclay.
Yeah, good evening, Council. I'm here to say the same thing Don just said, and I do have some of the paperwork on... initially, that was an environmental study that you were doing, and with those stipulations that were involved in there. And I just have a couple of things that are underlined. If you want to take these in reference to trying to solve this or whatever, let us know.
Do you want to give those to the clerk?
Okay. And that'd be all.
Okay, did you have anything else that you wanted to tell us? Okay, so all the information that we need, handed to the city manager. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The next card I have is Mary Lee Hyman.
Mary Lee Hyman, 2141 Shoreline Drive. Madam Mayor and members of the council, On behalf of Dr. Mark Lebed and the Dinosaur Case Preservation Society, I'm pleased to give a brief but very happy report about today's progress on Dinosaur Caves Park. Surveying the new lawn and trail extension at Dinosaur Caves was started yesterday and completed today. The generous gift of Surveyor Leonard Langer for his surveyors organization, who set the stakes and outlined the area at no cost to the city or to the Preservation Society. Construction has begun today on the mow curbs and new paths for the park, and contractor Greg Stratton is moving ahead quickly, anticipating being finished in time for the huge crowds in excess of 3,000 people who visit the park on the 4th of July. Today, the Dinosaur Caves Preservation Society handed our check in the amount of $18,323 to Susan West Jones and the City of Pismo Beach. The money pays for the recent mow curb contract to be extended to surround the grassy area already in place at Dinosaur Caves. And I'm especially happy to report building that extension will make it easier for city crews to mow and manage the area. It should be acknowledged that $10,000 of that check was the generous gift of John Rosetta family. I'm less pleased to report that our cupboard is now bare.
Encanto Avenue, Pismo Beach. Pardon me. I'm here this evening to speak on behalf of the Beach House Inn. This is the Beach Holdings Incorporated, Mr. Doug and Ms. Shirley Davies. I'm the architect that designed that hotel 5-6 years ago. The hotel received certificate of occupancy July 9th, 2004. That will be coming up this coming July on 2 years. It has been the owner's desire to request of your planning commission and ultimately the city council to convert the ownership of that hotel, not use, but ownership, from single ownership to condominiumization. What this does is it allows the owners to sell incrementally the individual 14 units, help them recoup much of their construction and development costs. It will not change the use of the hotel. We also do not believe it will change any of the bed taxes that the cities currently enjoy. Those two issues, the daily stays and use for the public and the bed tax issue, are items to be ironed out ultimately by first your planning commission and then by the city council during the approval of the map process. I'm not here to discuss that this evening. What I am asking is this. At present, California state law has no time restriction separating the occupancy, certificate of occupancy, to any future trigger date for filing of map of change of ownership to condominium. The city of Pismo Beach, however, does. I want to quote tentative and parcel map approval, your section 16.604.050. The planning commission shall disapprove a tentative map or preliminary parcel map for a conversion project if it finds, and then dropping down to section 2, and I quote again, the application for map approval is filed less than 5 years from the date of the original certificate of occupancy for the building was issued. There's good reason for the delay. No one wants to come in with a project in one set of clothes, get the project approved, built, and then turn around and make it become something else the next day. I assure you this is not the case with the Beach House Inn. As I say, this project is now going on 2 years after occupancy. What I am requesting of the city is not to abandon any time delay between occupancy and change and request to change the ownership conditions for condominium, but to please consider reducing that time limit. If, for example, you were to cut the 5.5 years down to only, 5 years down to only 2.5 years, that would allow Ms. Davies within the next 3 or 4 months to start processing her application. She certainly has shown her good faith. Again, I would like you to please consider this at your convenience, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. The next card I have is Kristen Wolf.
Did you write that code down in section? My name is Kristen Wolf. I live at 147, number 5, Stimson Avenue, Pismo Beach. Madam Mayor, City Council, I too would like to alert you to the fact that despite what this...
I'm going to pull your mic down.
Despite what this City Council concluded, Housing Element Policy H13 says that a permit may be approved for demolition or conversion of existing residential housing occupied by low to moderate income persons when the applicant meets several conditions. Conditions require that the applicant replace affordable units with others, provide a relocation package. What it came down to is the measure the applicant shall submit prior to issuance of demolition permit for housing on site, a plan acceptable to the community development director for providing relocation assistance to moderate income and below tenants. Plan shall include reasonable moving expenses and assistance in finding new homes, program to provide for replacement units acceptable to community. And the 6 months. What happened was we were given on Mother's Day 60 days to vacate. It shows disrespect for this council. It shows disrespect for the tenants. If they are going to demolish, then they are going against the recommendations. If they are going to convert, the same thing goes. But if they are going to leave it as an eyesore and a temptation to vagrants, then Pismo is really going to have a problem on their hands. I would really like to say this is a problem for Pismo because they're being disrespected. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I don't know if you were here earlier, but we did refer this to staff to investigate. Okay.
Corpus of evasion. These words are paramount. The appeal filed in regard to Planning Commission's decision was business item number 6F on the May 2, 2006 regular council meetings. The moment fees were accepted, the city and the city council entered into a contractual agreement. The council is required to schedule a hearing within 30 days of the filing date as per the municipal code. The municipal code is not subject to suspension, least of all discretionary interpretation. However, it is purposeful evasion to not schedule the hearing date. Any circumventing is subject to punitive consequences, one of these being the alleged fraudulent intent, non-scheduling the hearing date, and in place to set up a workshop at the recommendation of the staff, who have no authority to do so, is in stark violation of the authority of rules of order. I shall read now the page C32 of the rules of order from line 15 to 24. Motions that conflict with corporate charter, constitution, or bylaws of society, or with procedural rules prescribed by national, state, or local laws are out of order. And if any motion of the kind is adopted, it is null and void. I suggest to avoid possible censure of the council and punitive consequences, you recess of this council and punitive and recess the sessions to revisit business item 6F of May 2, 2006 to immediately schedule a hearing in response to the appeal. It is at this hearing the Planning Commission may request additional study and continue the hearing. Not the staff recommends the courts. I'll give you the copy of this written statement.
Thank you, Doctor.
I will leave a few copies of this on the table. Everybody wants.
I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. The next card I have is Stephen Chapeau. Am I pronouncing that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Hi, my name is Stephen Champeau, and I'm here to represent the post-2829 Veterans of Foreign Wars, who are your tenant in the Pismo War Memorial Veterans Hall. As you all probably know, a Veterans Memorial Hall that's dedicated that way has the same stature as Arlington National Cemetery. It is governed by some very specific California statutes and federal law. Approximately 3 years ago, the hall had fallen into such disrepair that the west wing was about to slide down the hill with some very good conversations between the city and the veterans. The city of Pismo Beach stepped up and did a wonderful job refurbishing that hall, not only structurally, but also cosmetically. It reopened 2 years ago on April 3rd. There is only one little glitch, and we don't seem to be able to get that fixed through normal channels. There were two flagpoles in front of the hall when the demolition started. When the hall was rebuilt, there was only one flagpole re-put up. So right now, we're flying the national anthem, national ensign, and we're under-flying the state of California. We are not, however, flying the prisoner of war flag. Now, for the veterans of foreign wars, this is not an option. For us, this flag has to be flown. It is one of our main priorities to keep the spirit alive of all the prisoners of wars and all those missing in action until they're all accounted for. So once again, after 2 years of trying to get this straightened out, it has not happened yet. It's embarrassing. We had the California Veterans Council meet in that hall last week, and I had the chairman ask me, where is your POW MIA flag? And my response to him is my response to everyone who's asked me that in the last 2 years. Anyone who needs any service hours, you have children or grandchildren need service hours, the Saturday before that, 9 a.m. on the 27th, we put those markers out. So anyhow, thank you very, very much for your attention.
Thank you very much. Maybe we can ask staff to look into the second poll and make some kind of a report to us on it? Or
we will, and we'll get back to the council.
Okay, thank you very much.
Within the next week.
Okay, I have no other cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak under public comments? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council, and then now it's time for city council comments and requests.
Madam Mayor?
Does anyone have any?
If I may. Well, thank you for the opportunity. And thank you all for tuning in, and thank you all for coming in the audience as well. It's good to have this kind of participation, and we hear it every day. So thank you all very much. I appreciate it greatly. Something I'd like to remind everyone, a friend of mine in town, Bob, sent me some emails regarding this new ABC movie that's coming out with reference to the flu pandemic. And it is a fictional story. I guess some are concerned that some are going to look at this and see it as a true incident, and it is not. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. I understand it's a wonderfully produced movie. However, the intent should not be to scare anyone. And with that in mind as well, Bob has also suggested that I talk to you all about being due diligence in your own homes, storing extra water, storing extra food. I mean, there are issues that we have on a daily basis here on the central coast of California, and we never know what could happen, tsunamis, earthquakes, Diablo. So please take care of yourselves and your family, and just take a little extra time to put some water aside and some extra food and medical and radio and flashlights and those types of things. And I'm certain if anybody has any questions, they could call City Hall, and there are county agencies that are willing to give you a listing of all of the things that you should have as well, and we could certainly refer them to you. The other thing, briefly, that I would like to talk about is the flagpole that was just mentioned. I, too, am a Vietnam veteran, a very proud Vietnam veteran. In fact, I was very pleased and proud to speak to the American Legion the other evening, who has now joined forces to a degree with the VFW. Very, very proud of that. Paul Bailey, many, many years ago, purchased the flagpole down at the pier. My family and I purchased the flagpole at the new police department that was just built. Christine and Bill Coach just purchased the flagpole that is at Chumash Park. And I would ask and offer to anybody out there in the public, if you would like to donate that flagpole, the city would be willing to accept that. We could certainly put a plaque in memory or memorial. But it's a nice gesture, and it's something that will live forever on your behalf. So if there is anybody that would out there that would like to do that, I encourage you. The cost is about $7,000. It's not inexpensive, but it's there and it's available. I think 8 years ago when I did it, it was only $2,800, so times have changed, unfortunately. And the last thing that I would like to do, Madam Mayor, is just request from you that you address staff with reference to this 30-day issue that Dr. Sharma has brought forward. Madam Mayor, thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
Okay, thank you. As regards to that, I think we were acting under the city attorney's advice. So, and of course, this evening it's not on the agenda, so we'll probably have to put it on a future agenda to discuss. But does the city attorney want to make a comment?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I put together a legal research memorandum that circulated to the council. I won't go into the details of it because it is an attorney-client communication, but I'm confident that the council had the power to do what it did at the last meeting. I will note that there's a provision in our own municipal codes. While we have accepted Robert's rules, in instances where there are no other rules adopted by the City Council or applicable provisions of state law, it does say that the rules are adopted to expedite the procedures of the business of the Council, and the failure to strictly observe such rules shall not affect the jurisdiction of the Council or invalidate any action taken at a meeting that is otherwise held in conformity with the law. So I'm comfortable that the Council had the power to do what it did at the last meeting.
Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay, thank you very much. Does anyone else have any comments this evening?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. 2 weeks ago Saturday, became the proud owner of a Newton. And unfortunately, in an international competition, and one of their members, Matt Gallagher, who lives in Grover, but took second place in the world for juniors. So we were excited and very proud of him, and I'm happy that Esteem sponsors those surfers to do that. And that's all I had. Thank you.
Very good. Our kudos. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have anything?
Well, I wanted to thank Mr. Delzite for emailing the council and giving him a heads up on the Dolliver slurry and the delays, because I'm sure we all got calls about it. So we were able to give the correct information on the delays. So thank you very much for that. And taking phone calls and not knowing what was happening. So thank you. And the other thing, I know that our police chief already mentioned that the police officer memorial is Wednesday morning. That's May 17th, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. You know, I came from a law enforcement family. My husband's first retirement some 35 years ago was a detective for the sheriff's department. And our heart goes out to any of these law enforcement officers that give the ultimate sacrifice. And I now have a son-in-law that's a policeman with a police department in Tulare County. So I wish you would go out to the pier tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to acknowledge all these persons, these police officers that have fallen. Thank you very much, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry to say I won't be able to be there. I have legislative days in Sacramento, and my plane leaves very early. So my apologies, Chief. I would have liked to have been there. It is an important day. I have an announcement for the parents at Shell Beach Elementary School. They're having a huge benefit at Dolphin Bay on June 2nd from 6:30 to 9:30. The state of the school address will be given by the principal. At 7 o'clock, you can browse and get ready to bid. There is a silent auction and also a live auction that begins at 8:15, and then there's a grand finale drawing at 9:30. Tickets are $40 a piece. If you feel that you could support this, they would be most appreciative. And it's a great place to have it, the new Dolphin Bay. And that's all I have. Next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. Is there any items that the council wanted to pull? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move, Madam Mayor, that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and second for an approval of the consent agenda. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Any opposed? I'm sorry. Any opposed?
No.
Thank you. Passes 5-0.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is public hearing, and we usually hold our public hearings at 5:30, but I will take the liberty of moving up item 6C, am I right?
Correct.
Item 6C, so that we can move along on our agenda. And Mr. City Manager.
Madam Mayor and Council, I'd like to take the opportunity tonight to introduce the president of Marlowe & Company and the vice president of Marlowe & Company. They're here in the audience. They're a Washington, D.C.-based lobbying firm. The president of that company, Mr. Howard Marlowe, is with us tonight, and he's going to get up and brief us in a second, as is his vice president, Mr. Greg Burns. They have a very successful track record over the last 10 to 15 years representing coastal communities throughout the United States, and I'm talking about both on the eastern seaboard, on the Gulf Coast states, and then here in California. And I think they're going to tell you tonight which communities they represent here in California and what they've done for those communities. So what we'd like to ask them to do tonight is to give us an introduction to their company, what they can do and what they have done successfully for other coastal communities. And then we are not asking tonight the council for any kind of allocation of monies or any kind of decision. This is merely information tonight and a chance for the council to ask these gentlemen some questions about the services they can provide. But ultimately, we have in about 3 months, a little less than 3 months, the mid-cycle budget review, which would be an appropriate time if the council thought the company offered some good services where we could hire the company to do some things here for this city. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and introduce Howard and Greg Burns. Howard?
Thank you very much, Mr. City Manager. Madam Mayor, good seeing you again. And
nice seeing you.
Members of the council, thank you very much. This is our second visit out to your beautiful city.
Benson, California, to the south of you. Farthest north is Carpinteria in Santa Barbara County, then San Clemente in Orange County, Solana Beach in San Diego County, and Imperial Beach in further down in San Diego County. We also represent a joint powers authority in Santa Barbara and Ventura counties called Beacon. It's a beach nourishment group, basically a coastline preservation type group that they have there. And they have representatives from all the jurisdictions that are involved on that committee. But we wanted to take an opportunity to try to come further north with our business. And We had a chance to sit down a year ago and hear some things that, you know, about what you all were doing and where you all were going as a city in terms of projects, additional revenue that you might generate in the future. But we got the picture that things are changing here and that we thought that we could be helpful or that we can be helpful in the future in trying to help you out with some of these things that you're moving towards. We represent about 40 communities all across the country, including the five that I mentioned in California. They're all municipalities. That's what we do. That's what we've done ever since I've been with the firm for the past 4 years. That's what Howard is, the firm has transformed itself into over the past 15 or so. Last year, we were able to help secure for our clients $45 million in federal funding for projects. That for them, in terms of their investment in our services, was over a 40-to-1 return on investment. So it paid off nicely for them, and that's what we see it as. It's an investment, not really in us, but in trying to get something more back from the federal government. You all pay taxes. Your community pays taxes. You probably don't get as much back as you pay in taxes. But our role is to do a few things. We work with you to help you figure out where your priorities mesh with opportunities that are available in Washington for securing federal funding. Then we use our knowledge and our expertise to help guide you in the process of actually what to do. How do you actually go about trying to get these funds? Who do you talk to? What do you say when you're actually talking to them? And, you know, it's something that we have done for all of our other communities over the past many years. Just to give you a brief idea of some of the things that we're working on in other communities in California, the city of Imperial Beach has a Army Corps of Engineers project that they're working on. They also are doing a bike trail through the main part of the city that will connect with an estuary in the southern part to help tie all that together. So it's sort of an economic development project at the same time. San Clemente has a reclaimed water plant that they're trying to expand. Solana Beach has a restoration of a lagoon in between them and their neighboring city, Encinitas, that they would like to restore along with some other coastal features in their city. They're also working on bluff erosion issues, which I know is something that you all are facing here. Carpinteria has issues with beach erosion, and that's their main concern there. In our discussions with Kevin over the past year, we've really focused on, at this point, three main areas where we think we could be helpful to the city. One is turning Old City Hall into something that you all see as something that you want to, you know, turn it into. I know you haven't come up with a firm plan of what that may be, but I think once you all have gotten to a point where that is a plan, and hopefully you'll get there soon, there should be federal money available to help restore that building or do whatever you want to do, change it into something else. Clearly, the federal government does not come into places and completely build buildings like that for people, but they can help partner with you in building a new facility there or really renovating a facility there. Obviously, bluff erosion, I mentioned that, is a major issue here. We had the chance today to go out with Mr. Rice and see some of the more recent areas where it was affecting the city, not only in affecting private property but also public infrastructure, things like sewer lines and water lines, roads and whatnot that have actually been closed down there by the bluffs. We have experience working with federal agencies that do partner with communities in this type of work. This is not an easy solution, the bluff erosion. As I'm sure you all are aware, even if you're going to build a seawall here in California, you have to go to the Coastal Commission to do it. You have to build it in a way that where you don't even know it's a seawall, and you have to build it with erodible materials. In a lot of ways, it's not much different in what you're doing at the federal government level, but they can partner with you and, you know, give you some maybe some technical advice that you may not have or something like that, but also helping to fund those projects. And that would be our goal there. There's also the issue of Radio 9 that still retain us. We finished their first project. We finished their second project. And we, you know, are on a third or a fourth. That's something that we hope we can have here. It's something that we do have with our other communities in California. Our oldest one there is Solana Beach at the moment. And we've been a client of theirs for 5 or 6 years. So they're all hopefully very happy with our services and with what we provide. You know, we know that now you have a mid-year budget review coming up, and I think that we'd like to be able to propose providing services to you for the next year, and that's how we generally do it, is a year-long contract. And hopefully you all will take that under consideration at the right time. But we'd be glad to answer any questions you all may have.
Thank you. Does any of the council have any questions?
I have two. Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you. You mentioned you had secured $44 million in federal monies. Roughly how many projects was that? I mean, is that...
Well, we have 40 clients, and I'd say on average they probably have about 1.25 maybe projects per client. So maybe 60 projects.
Okay.
It's hard to put those types of accomplishments... we've broken it down into a sort of a soundbite, and it's not always the best way to explain things when you're really trying to be in depth. Various projects have various funding needs.
Sure.
You know, for instance, for a radio relay system, upgrading a radio relay system, that might not be a very large federal funding request. But we worked on a project in Texas where we secured $11 million for them. For instance, we have another project this year in Florida, Fort Pierce, Florida, which is north of West Palm Beach, where they are trying to encourage the speedier construction of a federal courthouse. Well, that's a $50 million project. So if we were able to do that, obviously we'd have a lot of, you know, accomplishments on a whole for our clients this coming year.
Mm-hmm.
But the $11 million was the largest project we had last year, so... Most of them, you know, are anywhere from a couple $100,000 to the small few millions.
Okay. Thank you. That's really all I had.
Thank you. That's all you have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have any questions?
I do. I have. That was a question I had was when it said $44.8 billion, then I counted that you had 44 clients listed, so I assumed it was around a million. And I do understand that each project is different. What is the cost to each of your clients?
For retaining us?
Yes.
Well, it does vary also. I mean, depending on the type of work we're going to do.
Well, could you give me a scenario so I would know what ballpark we're
in? I mean, for your community, we have discussed a fee between $3,000 and $3,500 per month for a retainer. So roughly $40,000 a year. Does that answer your question?
That does.
Okay.
Thank
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, our fees in general, they range anywhere from $36 to maybe $60 or so.
Mm-hmm. And after meeting with Mr. Rice, you came up in that ballpark of approximately. Okay. Thank you.
And it really depends on how much effort we think we would, you know, it'll take to be successful.
Okay. And there's no guarantee of success. This would be $40,000 if you were successful or not successful.
That's okay. Correct. I mean, that's just the unfortunate way that things work. It's funny because we were just in another meeting earlier this morning with someone who they talked about a guarantee that someone went on a lobbying trip, not a client of ours, to Washington, a local mm-hmm. community here, and their elected officials came back and were quoted in the paper as guaranteeing that the money would be there at the end of the year. So it's sort of exuberance. When we heard that, we said, oh, you know, we're glad that we don't make that type mm-hmm. of remark because, you know, you can't guarantee. Having said that, our success rate on behalf of our clients is over 90% when you calculated that, was over the past many years.
20-some-odd years of having over 90% success. And, you know, for us, it's important. It's not just the money. It's the project. It's what it's going to be used for that's important. So it's like today just beginning to see some of the things that we might be working on if you hired us. There's a level of involvement that's extremely important. And also in dealing with agencies after money is procured for our clients, sometimes we're spending more than half of our time making sure that it then gets to you in the way that it should get to you and gets used the way you want it used.
Mm-hmm. Well, 90% rate is good for me. I just don't know how that would be for my constituents.
I understand.
And also, I have a question for Mr. Rice. If we decided to go in this direction, would council be presented with projects before hiring?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
Well, yeah. I it would be my recommendation that we do that before you even prioritize. Maybe you have staff draw up an informal list. We give you our, you know, sort of the likelihood of success sort of barometer, okay. And then you all can take that into consideration when you ask us, when you then respond and say, well, this is actually how we want you to work on things. And it is also important for the council to prioritize the projects that it wants us to work on. Because, for instance, the congressional delegation, both the senators and the congresswoman, Capps, will require that you let them know what your most important priority is, because they can't guess. Mm-hmm. We actually have, unfortunately, one of our clients refuses to do that because they want to make it so that both their projects are the top priority, because clearly each project is responding to a different constituency in their community. And it makes things difficult. So we certainly would want to work with you beforehand to let you know what was most likely, and then we would need you to respond to us telling us what was most important to the community.
When you referred to one of your clients wanting two projects being prioritized on the same level, had they been with you before that particular year?
Yes.
Where they kind of knew how things worked? Okay.
Yeah, and they were familiar. They knew what they were doing, but we had to be clear that they were potentially putting themselves at risk and et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of they were making a calculated decision.
Well, we're obviously not as savvy yet. Thank you both very much, gentlemen, and thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't have any questions, but I'm going to have you stand by, and I am going to go to the public to see if anyone has any questions or comments. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Learned a little bit more again tonight. So thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Please step up. Do you want to just stand by for a few minutes till
sure.
we finish
Happy to.
Seeing if the public? Be my guest.
I think it's similar to what I've been presenting.
Thank you very much. Okay, thanks. Yes.
Marilee Hyman, 2141 Shoreline Drive. Madam Mayor, members of council, there are lots of times when you can hire somebody and they're worth their weight in gold because they bring in more money than they cost you. And that's the kind of position you'd want to be in if you took advantage of this group. I'm sure there are many reasons for the 10% failure where they did not get money for their clients. And I can't imagine that this group wouldn't analyze the reasons for those failures, that they were not able to get funding for their clients. Would they be willing to share what some of those reasons are? Are they client problems? Are they changing of the rules? Are they too much competition for the money? Would they mind sharing some of this information on that 10%? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do you mind doing that?
Sure. I have a good example, actually, from last year. One of the clients that I work with, I handle California, Florida, and Texas clients for our firm. And one of my clients, our clients, really, in Florida, Fort Myers, Florida, has two projects for the same client. So we discussed three here tonight, or I just mentioned three things. But this client had two. One was restoration of the Thomas Edison and Henry Ford winter homes, which is a major tourist attraction in that area of Fort Myers, Florida. Another is to actually try and get educational funds to not just restore it, because they have that part of it, but educational funds to help improve their educational opportunities they can offer to local school children in the area to help them learn and provide, you know, new avenues for kids to learn about Edison and Ford and what they did. Fortunately, we were successful on the restoration funds in the last fiscal year. We were able to get them $200,000 for that. Previous year, we had gotten them $475,000 for that. We were not successful, however, in getting them the educational funds. The reason being is that Congress, when they passed what's called the Labor HHS, which means Labor, Health, and Human Services Appropriations Bill. It's one of the 11 bills that Congress must pass every year that funds the various agencies. The money that we were seeking in that bill, Congress actually decided not to include any projects in that whole bill. What happened is during this is really minutia, but the House and the Senate each pass their own version of the bill, and then they have to come together and they have to compromise on one bill that the whole Congress can pass and support. What happened is that there was not enough funding, according to some, for things like Medicare, Medicaid, education in general, just general health and human services types of programs. So what they did is they said, well, we're going to take out all the projects that are in this bill and put that money towards these programmatic issues instead. So the bill actually came out last fiscal year with zero projects.
Oh, I think it was secondary dwelling units.
I think that we really got through a lot of it, but are you going to be okay, Tom Weiss?
We've been asked for a break. We will have a 5-minute break that will bring us to about, let's make it 5:45.
Oh, so that's it? We're breaking right now?
Yeah.
That's what he wanted.
Okay. Yeah, yeah,
I understand.
Dang.
Yeah. Hi, Rudy.
Public hearing for evaluate an amendment to our existing secondary dwelling unit ordinance. The proposed amendments come out of a council workshop that we had on July 31st, 2006. And I'll go over the issue areas of amendments. If you turn to page 5A, page 2, is a kind of a chart that's it's probably the easiest to follow, and I can go right down it. One of the issue areas that was talked about, and the Planning Commissioner originally made a recommendation, was that in the existing ordinance, there's no occupancy restriction. In the proposed amendment, the modified draft ordinance requires property owner or relative to occupy one of the units. that was to one of the reasons for that putting back into the ordinance was that if a property owner lived there, there was a better chance of self-management of that unit, and we wouldn't have a de facto duplex on that lot. The second area is the size, and there was a lot of concern of the size of the unit and where we were going with that. And one of the suggestions at the workshop was for lots smaller than 10,000 square feet that the size of the unit be reduced from 1,200 square foot for all units in our current ordinance to driveway or a buildable area of the lot. This another issue that was talked about, there was a lot of concern, was the exclusion of the heights. And if you remember way back a couple years ago, we had an emergency ordinance that prohibited the secondary dwelling units outside the coastal zone, and that was roughly in the Taft Street area up. In looking at that and relating to the single access issue of the heights, the ordinance has been amended to exclude secondary dwelling units from Stratford Street up. Stratford Street is the first street. Longview and Stratford is the first area of the Heights that has only a single access. The street below that, Lemoore, has access out to Price Canyon. Schaefer Lane has access through Bay Street and down. And so the recommendation in the new ordinance, it would be to exclude it from the Stratford Street up to the rest of the Heights. Another concern that was talked about and that I believe that was well received was to extend our amortization program for another couple years. And so the proposed ordinance would extend it to June 30th, 2007. Now, on our amnesty program, when a person comes in, and we've had a few, not a whole lot of them, but we've had the few that have come in, we've reviewed those units to the Uniform Housing Code, not the current Uniform Building Code. What that means is the Uniform Housing Code looks at life safety issues, and let's say your wiring was designed for the 1960 Uniform Electric Code. If it's still operating and everything works under the Uniform Housing Code, it's acceptable. The Uniform Housing Code, however, you look at things as where the water heater is located. Let's say if it's in a bedroom, you'd have to locate it out. But if the building was built to the current code at that time and it's all still working, it would meet those life safety things. So we never have required them to bring it up to current Uniform Building Code. Another thing that was discussed and given direction was impact fees, is that under the current zoning ordinance, the second dwelling units were exempt. And there was discussion that because of that increased quote-unquote potential density that and infrastructure needs, that that unit should pay something. And the proposal is that they would pay one-half the rate of a regular single-family residence. And so that's part of the amendment. That's basically where the key issue areas amendments have been. I believe it addresses owner occupancy. It addresses the size of the unit in relationship to the lot. It addresses the parking issue that gets it out of the front yard. It addresses the Pismo Heights. It addresses the amnesty program to extend that so those other units can come in. And it addresses development impact fees for those units. The only request I have is if the council, in looking at the requirement for property owner or relative, if the council feels uncomfortable with a relative, because a relative is a flexible term. It could be your son, it could be your daughter, it could be a grandson, it could be a grandparent. If that's too much flexibility, we could simply strike relative and have property owner on that. And in this modification, a couple weeks ago, Councilman Natoli had requested the deputy director for the Division of Housing Policy Department from the state to come and tour the town. And we had a good meeting with Kathy Creswell and Paul McDougall.
and they drove around the town, and I discussed these point issues with them, and they believe that it meets all the requirements relating to the state law in relationship to secondary dwelling units. So I wanted to mention that we've got some good information from them, and they're going to give us some help in our housing element, give us some guidance on that too. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer
them. Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from the council?
I'd like to hear from the public.
No question. I just have one or two. Mm-hmm. One is if we do require that there be a minimum lot size, that's not in violation of what the state's requiring.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that fee, that will not apply to those that are already in existence, correct?
Right. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
may I add to that question?
Sure.
Is it if there's a historic unit out there,
Hi, I'm Rena Sheldon, and I live at 990 Visalia Street. And I am asking the council to limit as much as possible. I would like to see no secondary units above up on the hill. My reasons for that are most houses up there already have only one parking space in front of their house. If anybody has more than two cars, the streets are already congested. It's going to impact, I think, a health and safety issue in terms of potentially doubling the population up there. If you have secondary units on these lots and you have basically a husband and wife living in a house and then you have two other people living in a secondary unit, you know, how many cars are you talking about? How much more congestion are you talking about? There is one egress, ingress and egress from that hill. And I don't think that the quality of life, I don't think the image for the city is going to be enhanced at all. And I think that it's nice to say that, well, not everybody is going to do that. Not everybody's going to build a secondary unit, so what's the big deal? But I think if you approve the fact that they can, that given basically the limited land, you have to look at a worst-case scenario of the fact that if everybody did it, then what are you going to do to the parking, to the congestion, to the health and safety issues of getting in and off that hill? I just quite frankly don't think it's a good idea, because in my mind you have to look at the worst-case scenario, that everybody could do it. I moved into a single-family residence neighborhood. I'd like to keep it that way. And I guess that's pretty much my comments, except for the fact that if the council does decide to allow these units, I would very, very highly go strike the and relative part that make it be the property owner. And then I don't know how you manage, you know, the issue of if that property sells, that, you know, the property owner has to live there in order for you to use the secondary unit. So I don't know. It starts getting into kind of some sticky wickets, I would think. Something hard to maintain on an ongoing basis.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I just will mention that the state is requiring us to allow secondary dwellings, but they also say you can establish some rules, and that's what we're trying to do. So it's kind of something that we can't say no to totally, but we can try to restrict it for our community. Thank you very much for your comments.
Say that I think that the owner should live in the main unit or one of the units.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. This is a public hearing, and the next card I have is Barton Denon.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, staff. I'm so pleased that it appears that this issue of these amendments is finally coming towards where it looks like there's going to be a solution. I'm keeping my fingers and toes crossed for the next few meetings. And I've felt the last 3 years that I was in limbo, and I'm sure my neighbors did, and I'm sure people that are interested in building and in renting what they build are, would like to see a final solution, whether we like it or not. I'm generally pleased with what council and staff's recommendations are, as Mr. Bloom explained them. I'm particularly pleased, of course, that you apparently would like to honor that commitment to protecting Pismo Heights. I thought Councilman Ravenald had some extremely valid reasons for making a larger area of exclusion. But be that as it may, I'm pleased with what it looks like we may get. I think it is perfectly appropriate to set a maximum unit size, to impose some more parking restrictions, and in fairness to the other taxpayers of the city, impact fees should be imposed, in my opinion. I, too, think that there should be an owner on the property, not just a relative. I have some nephews and cousins I love dearly, but I don't think they and two houses full of their musician friends and college buddies would really manage the property appropriately. There is one item that I very much would like to see in there. Mayor Reese alluded to it a moment ago. I think there should be a minimum lot size.
Immediately come back with a second dwelling unit so we could get closure on the ordinance.
Okay, and it goes into effect how many days after?
30 days.
After the second reading, 30 days, I think?
Yeah, 30 days after the second reading.
Does that answer your question? Okay. I have Dr. Brahma Sharma.
Brahma D. Sharma, 610 Vista Pacifica Circle. I don't have a particular personal interest in these secondary dwellings, but two things occur to me. The point number one, is the secondary dwelling will help the city in terms of affordable housing or low-income housing? Secondly, the question of management. We do have in this city number of business that manage properties. Can that be put into this ordinance that if the person who doesn't want to stay there or cannot live there, will he be required to have a professional managed place?
Thank you. The next card I have is Tony Spinelli.
Honorable Mayor, members of Council, Tony Spinelli. Just a couple of comments. Number one, I think that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create affordable housing for the area. I think the state has mandated that we need a minimum of 600 and, was it 21 or for our city? I have an issue as an owner of a half acre up on Bakersfield Street. I think that according to lot size, that if we do in fact have room, and as the gentleman just pointed out about minimum lot coverage and maximum lot coverage, that if somebody can in fact be within the confines of the building ordinances of the city of Pismo Beach, that the use of adding a secondary dwelling should be allowed. As far as the one way up and the one way out, I can go into many situations to where Avila Beach, Kingfisher, where they all have just ingress and egress in one direction. But I do think that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create housing, and by stifling it is not helping it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next card I have is Steve Vieira.
Council, staff, Steve Vieira, 1260 Longview. The state has mandated over 600 units to be built in Pismo Shell Beach within 5 years, as of a year and a half ago. Secondary units can play a vital part of this goal.
If we don't meet this goal, we could possibly lose state and or federal funding to our city. Okay, whatever decision the council should make, be consistent throughout the city, including Shell Beach, Pismo, and Pismo Heights, which has been singled out. Singled out for what? I haven't seen any traffic reports. I haven't seen emergency vehicle reports on and off that hill, to my knowledge. I have not seen any impacts of the traffic. I drive this every day. It hasn't changed yet. Okay, what's the emergency with only very few permits in years? Anything less than consistency throughout the city is a violation of personal property, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other cards. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak to this item? This is a public hearing.
Ted Ehring, El Portal, Pismo Beach. I'm going to make my speech that I always make. This is a taking of our property rights. I think it's an unconstitutional law that's been pushed down on the local people. And I'm really not happy with it. I believe that at some time we'll see the constitutionality of this particular act questioned. But in the meantime, I share the previous speaker's viewpoint that if this is going to be forced on all R1 property to make it R2 property, I see no reason whatsoever to exclude Pismo Heights. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item? Last chance. I'm going to close the public hearing. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing and come back to the council. Does the council have...
do a presentation for us in the very near future. And they're going to show us how we could capitalize on getting funding for the older units if we needed it, and where we can get this funding to restore some of the older units. And these people are well versed in everything that is been pointed out on this agenda by Mr. Bloom falls right in line with all of our discussions. So I am very pleased that we finally come up with something where we could move ahead with this. The only area I think that I have a question on is the owner having to occupy, or somehow we have to get that ironed out, because I think that just a relative, as the gentleman said, there's some relatives I wouldn't want on my property. So...
thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I think we've hashed it out, and now Mr. Bloom has it narrowed down. And I had one question, Mr. Bloom. Mm-hmm. Anyone that has already applied for a secondary unit in the Heights or anywhere else will not be affected by this?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I don't care if they do or don't. I just want to know if they will be affected or not. Okay, and one of the speakers talked about relatives living there and, you know, could be college students, drummers, and such. And that was a great analogy of what could possibly happen if we don't be very strong on owner occupying one or the other, because you can just, I mean, it's pretty common sense that you will take care of your property much better than a distant relative, and then it can go on and on and on, and how far removed is that relative. So I think that's something that we really need to be strict with. I also think that we do have a huge problem with egress and ingress in the Heights. I mean, we all know that. Everyone in our community knows that. Not just 4th of July. You can drive up there anytime. I had a call from someone in the Heights that had a question. I drove up there, and I mean, there's cars parked out on the streets everywhere. And we have to judge by what the short streets in Shell Beach. And if you drive down there midweek, weekend, there's just cars everywhere. And we don't want that to happen to the Heights. We don't want it to happen anywhere, I mean, but it's already grandfathered in the short streets. And those won't be affected, those what we refer to as secondary dwelling units that they are using down there. Will those be affected at all, Mr. Malone?
No.
Okay. And then I think we need to have a restriction on the lot size. I think that's very important. And then I had one question about... I have so many things highlighted, but for right of means of purchasing. Lower, it's on page 7, 5A7, number 7. It says to provide opportunity for property owners to create housing that is affordable to lower to moderate income renters. And to me, it's very hard to clarify what's affordable housing in this community.
That's correct.
Could you help me out?
The goal is, by the size of the unit, it creates an opportunity for the for better terms, the affordable population, the target population it is. The state law doesn't require it to be affordable, but just by the relationship to the primary, to the secondary, and by the reduction of size, it will provide a unit that will have basically a little bit lower rents.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that equates to affordability. The housing element talks about second dwelling units and that it's a commodity that will help support the service population to a community.
Okay, but I think we sort of use affordable loosely if we don't have some guidelines on what it could be, because some of the secondary units are going for...
Oh, yeah.
The rent is outrageous.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not affordable for the lower to moderate income families. And with that said, that brings in the parking issue. If this is a lower to moderate income, you would assume that if there's two people that live in the secondary dwelling, that mm-hmm. they both work.
If you had a large side yard that could be developable, let's say you had a 15-foot side yard, you could use that 10 feet for that parking stall, mm-hmm. and you'd still have your 5-foot side yard.
So then with a secondary dwelling unit, and we're assuming two persons live there and two persons work, what's going to happen to that second vehicle?
It'll either be in the other part of the driveway or it'll be
on
the
street
in front.
Yeah.
The issue of the 600 square feet drops it down in size-wise that a portion of those may only be single-person occupancies.
Oh, okay.
And that's some of the discussion relating to dropping it down to 600 square feet for all the lots inside the city under 10,000 square feet. So
okay.
For better terms, this ordinance is a 600 square foot ordinance, except for those very few, very, very large lots in town. And there's percentage-wise, that's a very small percentage.
So that would somewhat address the parking mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't be interested in having secondary units above Stratford Street, for obvious reasons, because the ingress and egress. Now, if things go in the direction that we eventually, as mm-hmm. Councilmember Natoli had talked about at the mm-hmm. workshop, having something drop into Price Canyon, mm-hmm. and then I think that could come back.
Like any ordinances, like tonight, ordinances are quote-unquote living documents. You know, we're amending our current ordinance to reflect the workshop and some of the community needs. In the future, we can amend it again.
Okay. If that comes up. Okay.
If that issue comes up.
Okay, and we talked about parking primary. Mm-hmm. And on page 10, 5A10, K, number 2K, the secondary dwelling units that meet the above standards may be allowed, but it says that the planning that it's discretionary on behalf of the Planning Commission to, with proper notification,
that's correct,
to approve a secondary dwelling unit with exceptions. So we're hashing through all of this, and we want it to be a certain way. Different council members have different issues. But then the exceptions make me a little nervous because they're not spelled out.
Okay. They would be in the same purview as a primary house. For example, sometimes we have an exception on the heights as the cascading height of the house comes down, where you have because you have such a steep slope and you have to get a staircase in, you have where the headroom of the staircase turns, and that sometimes it goes over the 25-foot height,
mm-hmm,
of that little staircase area. And that's kind of like a quote-unquote example of an exception that the Planning Commission processes through a public hearing notifying the neighbors. We want to make it on those slopes and those issues identical to as if you're going to be building a primary residence. We don't want to have special regulations for them. If they're, mm-hmm, building within the envelope of the lot and they meet all the requirements except for if they want to apply for an exception, let's say in that scenario,
mm-hmm,
that would be approved by the and reviewed by the Planning Commission through a public hearing. And so that's the litmus test that we want to have for a second dwelling unit to make it identical to a primary residence.
Okay. And, of course, proper notification. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had problem with that
that's correct.
The past. So if we could really look at all. And that's all I have at this time, Madam Mayor. Thank you,
okay.
Mr. Blum.
Thank you. Councilman Ravenel?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I did a radio show this afternoon with Dave Congleton and Jerry Rio, the director for the Housing Trust Fund, was coming on after me. And one of the things that we were talking about very briefly was a very poignant issue that Councilwoman Arlene Gonzalez-Dream brought out, and that is affordable. What is affordable housing? And I thought what was interesting is it's really undefinable. Mr. Hearst, when he bought the Hearst Castle, that was affordable to him. So that's an extreme. What the state says is that affordable is 30% of your gross income, including utilities. And that is what affordable housing is. If you're making $1,000 a month, as an example, you would then be able to afford something about $300 a month. So it's very subjective and objective when you're taking second units citywide based on egress issues. I'm one of those people that I work hard for about 4 months, and then I spend the rest of my life on city council business. And during the winter months, I'm able to watch the History Channel and the Discovery Channel and those types of things, which I love greatly. Watched the Discovery Channel show the other day talking about the coast of California. And about 400 miles out there, there is a big mountain. I was talking with Joe Crescioni day before yesterday, I believe that it was. And we were talking about the tsunami. You know, and people giggle about it. Oh, she's not ever going to be a tsunami and da-da-da, whatever. And he was telling me about a surge that took place in the early 60s that actually flooded the downtown core. It came all the way up to Dolliver Street and did severe damage. Having watched that Discovery show, they had evidence that there was a slide on that mountain 400 miles out there. Could that have been what the deluge that came into our community in the early 60s? Possibly so. The other thing that the Discovery Channel said is that it's prime for another slide. As we know, that distance, 400 miles, is about ideal. If there's a major earth slide out there, off the side of that mountain, it is going to create one heck of a wall of water that is going to come into this community. Those that want to say, it just ain't going to happen. You know, I'm not willing to put my name and my reputation on the line to say that it's never going to happen. I believe strongly it will happen. It's just a matter of when. The other point that I think is interesting is that we really live on two earthquake faults. The third issue is Diablo Canyon. Not that I believe that it's going to explode, but I believe that it is just as susceptible to that same tsunami I just described, and just as susceptible to the two earthquake faults that we live on. My reason for saying all of this is that I believe that the area of restriction to the top of the heights isn't large enough. I honestly, in my heart, believe that Shell Beach is extremely vulnerable. There are only two entrances, onto that freeway, Spyglass and Dinosaur Caves Park. Could you imagine this wall of water? Could you imagine a tremendous earthquake? Could you imagine a Diablo disaster? And those thousands of people coming up their individual streets to Shell Beach Road and wanting to get out of town to protect themselves and protect their families? It won't happen. It will not happen. Staff, I believe, is going to argue with me. And staff is going to say, well, Bill, if it's that big of a problem, then possibly what we ought to do is halt all development in that area. I don't think that that's true, and let me tell you why. The secondary unit is going to provide the potential of doubling that area that we have in Shell Beach. And the business core. I'm not leaving out the business core either, the downtown business core. And what can happen is that as we consider the plight of the residents, it's not very favorable on their behalf. So I still believe vigorously. You see how my vigor's been tempered a little bit, but this is vigor. I vigorously would like to actually have 4th Street Bridge North exempt from secondary units. You have the heights, you have all of the disaster possibilities and probability, maybe more of a probability. You have the downtown core, we have visitors.
In that vein, I guess I would say that this is a good reason why maybe we should have a minimum lot size for second dwellings. And I would suggest that we say minimum lot size of 5,000 square feet. And then that would eliminate a lot of lots in Shell Beach, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think... Because if you were coming in and building a home or adding to your home, you'd have the prerogative of, as long as you stayed within the guidelines of the codes, you could cover more of the lot, possibly, than maybe what we're talking about in here. I think I would suggest that we say, okay, 600 square feet for lots, 5,001 square feet and up above, and that you can build a size that it would be allowed as long as it stays within the code section. Would be the same way as if you were to add on to your house. And then with a maximum of 1,200 square feet. And then thinking about what you were saying about the full impact fees, Is there a particular reasoning that you took half of the impact fees versus?
Mainly because of the size, the 600 square foot, in relationship to, it's half the size of a 1,200 square foot house. Obviously, our houses are, our new houses are much larger than that. But it was a reflection of the 600 square feet because the majority of the ordinance focused on that square footage because to go to 1,200 square foot, you'd have to have a 10,000 square foot lot and larger, and there's not a lot of those in town. And so that's kind of the reasoning behind that.
Okay. When you add on to your house, do you have impact fees that you pay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so we charge the full amount?
For square footage.
Okay. Right. So...
The existing ordinance and the previous ordinance and all that, the school district has always collected that square footage. Mm. That's a separate outside requirement.
Understood.
They've always collected that square footage.
Okay, so that's the couple of things that occurred to me as listening to all of you talk, that might be a reasonable way to go. I think I would agree with the exclusion of the Pismo Heights above Stratford. I have some ambivalence about that, but I guess I would agree to that. But those would be the couple of suggestions that I would have if the rest of the council would agree with that.
Okay. So we could take each issue that we spoke about, like do we want to require the owner to occupy one of the units?
Okay, what's the council desire on that?
I would be very much in favor of that.
Yes.
Okay. Owner-occupied, and that's what you're suggesting here?
Just strike the or relative.
Okay.
So strike or relative, okay? So we all agree on that?
Okay, and then would the 500... Okay. The 500 to 600 square feet under council preferences on page 2, we had said 600 square foot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that's what you'd said, Madam Mayor.
What they were suggesting that we go 600 square feet for lots smaller than 10,000 and up to 1,200 square feet for those larger than 10,000, and I was looking at a compromise there where we'd have a minimum of a 5,000 square foot lot. In other words, you could not build a second dwelling on anything less smaller than a 5,000 square foot lot.
I think that's an excellent idea.
I do too.
I think that's great. And then,
Randy? Did you get that?
Max.
Okay, and then I had one more question for Mr. Bloom. When you said there's very few lots that are above 10,000 square feet. Do you have any idea, approximate? Is there 2 or is there 25 or?
I don't think there's over 20 or 25 in the whole community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, I know Shell Beach only has maybe 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the south end of the town are regularly 5,000 square foot lots or standard lots. And up in the Heights, the end lots tend to be larger at the dead end,
uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the way up.
Yes.
There's not a lot.
Okay. All right.
We have a couple in my area.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so what are your thoughts about then just allowing the
vehicle where, you know, if we take it up to 7 and 8, then we almost, you can just about guess that you're going to have 2 vehicles. But whatever the council wants, I don't have a real strong feeling on that.
Except for that my feeling is you can add on to your house to that extent. So why couldn't you have a second dwelling that would be equal and still match the codes? And I mean, because there's nothing stopping from a person from renting out rooms to students in your... If you
I think your neighbors
house.
Will stop you if you start renting out rooms to students.
But I think that's a fair way to go. I think we're limiting it quite a bit by having 5,000 square feet as a minimum lot size. Mm-hmm. We're maximizing it at 1,200 square feet. And I think there's going to be very few that would be able to go up to 1,200 square feet. What size lot would that be if you
if you would be able to add a second dwelling at 1,200 square feet.
You could, on a 5,000 square foot lot, if you limited the primary, for example, on a 5,000 square foot lot, we see a lot of 3,000 square foot homes. You could have a 1,200 square footer plus the 1,700 square footer for the there's a potential of because of our lot coverage and
so what is the lot maximum lot coverage?
80%.
Right. I'm sorry.
80%.
That'd be 4,000 square feet on a 5,000 square foot lot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we have on 5,000 square foot lots mm-hmm. some decent sized homes.
But still, I could go and I could add on to my house mm-hmm. to that extent. So I guess that's what I'm just trying to find a fair.
Well, I'd be more comfortable, I think, Mayor, with staying with the 600 square feet. And again, traffic and off-street, mm-hmm. on-street parking, and all of those things are what really drives me to say that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, see, I don't agree with that because I could add on to my house, much more than that, and there could be extra cars because of it. So, mm-hmm. and I think 600 square feet is very limiting. It does not allow you to have much of a kitchen or a bedroom.
Do you think there's very many homes in your area that, and this is just your opinion, you might not know, that they rent out rooms to people? I don't think there's anyone in my neighborhood that does.
Well, there are some rentals in my complex where they
rent
have several rooms.
Yeah. To
Jennifer and I lived in a 600-square-foot home for 5 years down there on the Clamdigger property, and it was just the two of us. It was cozy, And we still love each other, even though we moved.
Well, I would like to see that, if you could see your way clear on that. But if you can add on to your house, I guess I'm feeling like there should be a little bit more leeway other than just flat 600 square feet.
Mm-hmm. I can't support it.
No, I kind of like this.
I prefer not to.
I kind of like this the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're just saying 600 square feet for a granny unit, and that's it, for a second dwelling.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't agree with that, but then we'll go on to the majority rule. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Parking. So we're removing it from the front yard.
That's correct.
And mm-hmm. saying you have to provide one parking space, it would be mm-hmm. to the side mm-hmm. or the rear. Mm-hmm. Is everybody happy with that?
To clarify that, you're allowed to count it on your driveway approach in front of the garage as long as it's a legal lot, legal mm-hmm.
20 feet.
Yes. Then you can locate it within the buildable area of the lot. So let's say which could be in the side of the lot, or it could be in the rear mm-hmm. lot if there was an alley, mm-hmm. Or if the house jogged over, you could locate it within the building area. Mm-hmm. You couldn't locate it within the front yard setback area of the house.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is that...
Yeah, that's great.
Everybody's okay with that? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Happy with that.
Then on the next item was the amnesty. And I could see some good reasons for extending that, because then we're going to make sure that mm-hmm. people, if they come in and get permitted, that it is going to be meet the mm-hmm. health and safety.
That's a good idea.
Okay.
I think it is as well.
Okay. So we have an agreement on that. So really, those are all the issues.
Well, the impact fees.
There's one last one on the next page, impact. The current ordinance requires impact fees at half the rate for a single-family residence. And there's a question from Councilman Ravenel, should it be brought up to 100%?
Okay. So if I were to add 600 square feet to my house, I have to pay full impact fees?
No.
Yeah.
This is.
Yeah. I think so.
I guess more than if you expanded your house and had a few more people living with you or had more children. Or
But this is a
soon
new,
grow
new
up and drive cars.
Yeah, I know. But this is an impact fee on new construction. And bottom line,
That's where it lies, in my humble opinion.
Okay. What's the council's desire then? Is there a majority on that? Or?
It almost takes it away from back to the affordable, if it's affordable to do. That's the only problem I have.
Don't let anybody kid you about these being affordable under any circumstances.
Well, I think I would rather stay with the half as suggested.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Majority rule.
Okay. So that's all of our issues, unless...
Well, I'd like to make a motion then, Madam Mayor, if
okay,
I may.
Okay, but before you do...
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. May I make a clarification?
Yes.
The only adjustment would be the elimination of the or relative.
Right.
And the rest of it would stay.
Okay. Well, no, we have a minimum of 5,000 square foot lot.
5,000. Mm-hmm.
In other words, there would be, the way I understood it was that what council wanted was any lot that's 5,000 square feet or smaller would not be allowed to have secondary dwelling units.
Wouldn't be eligible.
So the verb
is that correct?
Well, 5,000.
That's the intent.
5,001.
Yeah. 5,001.
So
greater than 5,000.
5,000 or above.
600 square foot maximum for lots.
5,000 to 10,000.
Right, and over 10,000, up to 1,200 square feet. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just wanted to mention the why not include. I guess staff put this in here. Why not hire an enforcement officer? That would bring existing illegal units into compliance. But now they're saying, but then it says to discuss this at a later time. I just wanted the public to know that was brought up in here. Mm-hmm.
And then we said we would look at it at mid-year review.
All right, Madam Mayor. Well, with that, if we can move along, I'd like to make a motion, if I may. My motion would include the adoption of the staff presentation and the modifications made, and the exclusion of secondary units from the 4th Street Bridge North.
Is there a second?
They're not. There should be. There'll be blood on somebody's hands someday.
Seeing no second, motion dies for the lack of second. Is there another motion?
Did we exclude the small heights as well?
Yes.
Yes. Stratford Street.
That, if I could, I just want to make sure that's clear. So, because when we say Pismo Heights includes
Stratford and above.
So
Stratford,
we're just saying above. Stratford and above. Yes. Okay, good. I just want to make sure everybody's clear. Okay.
Okay. Is there another motion?
I'll make the motion with everything except what Bill ended up with.
I second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt an ordinance as amended.
I'd like to take a roll call vote, if I could.
Okay. Please do.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Councilmember Rappinolt?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez-Chi?
Yes.
Mayor Reese?
No.
And I'd like to note that Councilmember Higginbotham has recused herself for a conflict of interest. Okay, thank you. The motion passes in 3-1.
Thank you all for your input.
Yes, thank you.
I need a 2-minute break.
Sure. Yeah, I do too.
I need a 2-minute break.
Mr. Rice mentioned this is an opportunity for you and the public to see the city's progress on projects identified in the approved CIP. The projects identified in this report are only those listed in the approved CIP, the approved current 5-year CIP, and only those that have had a change since the previous status report. If you have any questions, please feel free to stop me at any time. I brought my pen up here to take notes. If you guys have any particular comments or something I can't answer right here at the podium, definitely take a note and get back to you via email. So with that said, I'll begin. The first project to update is, of course, the most important project right now, and that's the wastewater treatment plant upgrade and expansion. In the photo, you see the new...
that was next to the baseball field. A mother came running up to me, waving her arms, saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And naturally, I took the credit. But her children were playing on that dirt, and they were buried. Now, they weren't buried bad, so they were going to die or anything. But part of the dirt came down right over the top of them and scared her to death, and she pulled them out of there. So I'm so glad now that we're taking that dirt out of there. But the most important thing, I think, is Kevin's attention to the health and safety issues down there, particularly safety issues with reference to the children. That ballpark is used so much. There is no marked parking. It's just very indiscriminate. And the children just run out between their cars. I mean, you know, a lot of them are only 5 and 6 years old, particularly the days that I go, because that's when the T-ballers are hitting. I just wanted to thank Kevin publicly for paying attention to that and for helping with that situation. So that's all I wanted to say on that.
Thank you.
Councilmember Higginbotham. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Along those lines, I know you're going to be paving. So how far can we take that paving out?
Yeah, I know.
Ah, yes. I mean, really.
The roadway going in to the treatment plant and to the yard will be paved. The area which has been gravel, adjacent to the ball fields, will remain gravel. So we're going to have paving on the road coming in. The area within the treatment plant will also be paved, and also the whole city yard will be repaved. It was basically crumbling to pieces through the years, but especially with all the heavy traffic loads during the treatment plant construction. So in a matter of a couple of weeks, the entire area will be repaved, except for the areas right adjacent to the ball fields, and those have historically been... Yeah. Gravel, and those will remain so.
Well, I think the paving in and out is going to be a huge improvement anyway. Okay, and then I guess my next question is, what about that road going up behind Blair Field that is just destroyed? Up behind the bleachers, Blair's that upper one that was the staging area?
That will be gravel.
That will be. Will they do some grading? And
yes, it'll all be graded out smoothly. Mm-hmm. And the landscaping that you probably saw will be finished off.
Perfect.
And there's additional landscaping that will be added that hasn't been installed yet.
So if you just let the slurry guy know if there's any extra, he could spread it out a little.
What are you thinking? How far do you want it to go?
Pave the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, would that be just too expensive to bring that right up to the ball field and then stripe those lots? I mean, that's what really needs to be done. You need to go down there and watch and just spend a little bit of time before the game starts and when the game ends in particular. The reason I brought that up is I saw a child, it was a little boy, and he was actually hit by one of the cars. Now, granted, the car was only going a mile or two an hour, but the child still was hit by that car. And it freaked me out. What if that was my son? I was bad enough that it's somebody else's son. And to be able to, I mean, it's only a car length or a car length and a half wide.
I'm sure you're thinking of.
Yeah.
If there's any extra left.
Well, why don't we do this? If I could suggest, why don't we give Dennis a chance to ask the Mingus or whoever the subcontractor is under Mingus what they would. You know, what's the price they're going to charge us for that additional strip that I understand?
And they may donate
about.
That. You know, I mean, they're very community-oriented, that company. And they may very well donate that in favor of child safety.
But let's find out, and then I'll let you know what the price
that
will
be. That would be good, I think, you know, while they're doing this, if we could accomplish that. I think that would be a good thing.
I'll be happy
to
do that.
I'll follow up on it right away.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
How many square feet in the building, in the lab?
Wow, I don't have that information committed to memory. I'm going to guess it's about a 2,000 square foot building.
That's what I was going to say, 1,800 to 2,000.
Right. Okay. Yeah, okay, not much more than 2,000, if at that. But
low cost housing.
There is a tour.
Bigger than my house.
That tours will be offered during the ribbon cutting ceremony that's scheduled for June 13th. And I think the council and the public will find it very, very interesting.
Well, there, I did
it's
already.
It's a nice looking building. And what's particularly impressive is the software control systems that we have that are were set up, and the graphics is absolutely amazing. And one other thing, when we have shown people, it's going to be one that I know you'll be particularly proud of when you see the final product.
Well, you'll be retiring soon, so I hope that you put your handprint down there someplace.
I don't have any plans for your future.
Thank you. Okay, Greg, I think we'll move on.
It's fortunate we have Dennis here tonight, who obviously is very involved in the details of that, and I'm not. I might mention something that's kind of interesting. The gravel parking area that the council's talking about this evening is actually benefited from a majority of our paving projects in town. It used to just be dirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I remember,
we were
actually
taking the grindings, mm-hmm. the street grindings from other paving projects and putting them in that
stock
area so they were at least gravel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we made some improvements already, a la paving projects. Mm-hmm. The next project up here is the slurry seal project. This is a very popular project, which was completed a few months ago. It included Shelbeach Road, which is shown in the photo here, James Way, Price Canyon Road, and 30 other local streets throughout the city.
Yay.
This is one of our largest projects so far, aside from the treatment plant. Construction on the project is complete. Some of you are familiar with some damage that was done by a contractor up in the Heights. The slurry seal contractor is still on the hook to repair that damage, and we are holding his retention. We're just trying to work out when, in fact, he can get here. You know, mobilizing an entire slurry seal crew from the valley over here to patch a small portion of street is a significant item for him, so we're trying to just come up with a good time when he can do it.
Why don't they just subcontract it?
Yeah, it's a good point. Good point.
Sure.
That does bring
to mind something, though. I did get a phone call. There must be some heavy trucks going up near Ventana that some of the neighbors in that area were concerned about, that it was going to be breaking up the street up there. I just got a phone call. I think
are you referring to Ventana or Visalia?
It would be near El Viento.
Oh, okay, Ventana.
Hmm. Up above El Viento up there. Just make a note of that. Thank you.
Yeah, I might comment on that. We have received some comments from residents. For example, power steering, if you turn the wheel on a vehicle with power steering while the wheel isn't moving, a slurry seal is made up of very fine aggregate. It's not like the original paving. So that fine aggregate doesn't have the strength to hold up against that. It doesn't destroy the slurry seal. The street is still sealed, but it does scuff the fine aggregate off the surface, and you'll see it. It's not a damage to the product. It's not a failure of the product, and it still will continue to do what it was supposed to do. But unfortunately, it isn't that attractive. So.
Thank you for holding that slurry seal contractor accountable for what's happening at the very top, because it really is a mess. So thank you.
You're welcome. Next project and shown on the slide here is the Cypress Bridge and Addy Street Promenade. I have two slides here. This is just the bridge, the Cypress Bridge. I say just the bridge. This is the bridge. And this is the Addy Street Promenade. You can see some folks in the background there taking a nice stroll from the beach toward Cypress Street Bridge. The project is complete. This new promenade, which is really just a walkway, extends from the first promenade project at the end of Addy Street that went along the beach there all the way to the new Cypress Street Bridge, which then extends onto the promenade between the cities of Pismo Beach and Grover Beach. So there's a pretty nice long walkway there all the way from eventually Main Street all the way to Grover Beach. And it's very well used. Every time I've been out there, there's a lot of people.
Any questions from the council? Okay.
Next slide is the Harbor View water line. You can see the water line in that photo there. Of course you can't. It was a water line and street repair project. You can see the new paving and striping. and we made some significant changes to the street. There were problems getting in and out of the driveways. There were drainage problems. We solved those problems with this project, as well as installed a new water line. The water line was almost an antique. And new services, new laterals, a couple of new fire hydrants. It came out a really great job. Unfortunately, the project did go a little over budget. There were some significant contract change orders on this, and kind of to be expected on a project of this kind where the street is very old and we're not sure of everything that's under there. So we ran into some bad soil problems, and that led to some pretty significant change orders. But the good news is that the notice of completion will be filed this month, as a matter of fact, and project's done.
Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions?
Okay.
Next project is the Pismo Oaks lift station. And no, that is not the lift station. Any questions?
No.
Okay.
I'll move on. The next project, Chumash Park. Another big success. We just had completion on the parking lot paving project. Now, that is a picture of the parking lot there, before and after. Unfortunately, what you don't see in this picture is the stripes or the wheel stops. I wrote the staff report prior to that being done. It's now done. The wheel stops are in place. The ADA accessible parking stalls are in and striped. The rest of the stalls are in and striped. There's some new sidewalk at the entrance to the park, and we solved a couple drainage problems along the way. Good news is we were able to revise the design during construction. We found that some of the conditions in the field warranted a reduced base section under the paving, and we were able to find some pretty substantial savings in the project cost. So that's good news.
Very good.
And we also negotiated a small contract change order to resolve some ponding we had in the sand playground area. So all in all, great project, saved money, and got more than we expected.
Very good. Thank you.
Any questions?
Nope.
Next project, iRelease Park. And it looks pretty much like the original iRelease Park because we're still in design. But design is 90% complete. We're reviewing the final plans and specifications right now, and we should be preparing bidding documents about the end of this month. So the project construction on this project will be funded almost entirely from grant funds, which is good news for the city. Any questions?
Nope.
Next project is the police station emergency generator. What you see covered here is the original generator that was purchased from the military on surplus. Unfortunately, the San Luis Obispo Air Quality Management District refused to offer us a permit for that generator. So we'll be selling it to probably another state or another agency that will be able to use it. In the meantime, a new generator has been purchased, and it is scheduled for delivery in about June. And work needed to wire and set the generator will be completed about the same time as it's delivered. So this project is underway. We're just waiting for delivery.
Doesn't look like we have any questions.
Any questions? Okay. Next project is the sewer trestle bridge repair project. You undoubtedly remember at the last council meeting you approved a contract with Whitaker Construction to construct the sewer bridge repair project. This is the bridge at Steamer's Restaurant. You can see here it's a fairly fine steel truss bridge. The welding has begun to fail, and the members were thin enough that they've actually begun to rust through. There are a total of four sewer trestles that need repair or replacement. The contract that we awarded was for construction of three. We had to leave one out. That one that we left out is the bridge between Shorecliff Lodge and Lighthouse Suites. As designed and bid, that project is infeasible. The cost for that one bridge alone exceeded the cost of the other three entirely. Staff is working on another alternative for this project, and you should see that coming forth in the next month or so.
May I ask why?
Hagan Bethan.
The fourth one, was it? Is it? I know it's probably a longer span, but...
Longer. It's significantly longer. Significantly longer, significantly taller, and access is next to impossible. The closest they could get to this was about 150 feet. And that, when you're talking about a crane lifting stuff over, you're talking about a very sizable crane. And the only way to place to park that was essentially in the parking lot at Lighthouse Suites, which would have blocked their entire parking lot. So the contractors were extremely nervous about the risk associated with parking the crane there, the risk of working over the gully, as it were, and and the risk of potential sewer backups while they had removed the bridge.
Wonder.
So I guess I'm afraid it's going to fail. You know, are there things in place now where we can monitor it, or I don't know what to ask, except that I'm just afraid it's going to fail, and then we're going to have a huge part. Then what do we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's of course, something that we think about all the time, too, and that's a big concern. The biggest threat we see is an earthquake, of course. If we had one, it would shake that trestle loose. The only...
to maintain? Well,
that's exactly the question we asked ourselves when we discovered that. So that's part of the information that we'll be bringing back to the council.
Okay, my number two.
We have all the facts laid out in front of us and analyze the options.
My number two question then, is there a main that goes down the middle of the street at that location?
Greg, I know you've spent some time looking at
that. Not just down the middle of the street, but actually on the side of the street that the Shorecliff Lodge is located.
Well, I'll look forward to your results. It sounds very promising.
Right.
I think Councilmember Rabinall has anticipated where we may be leaning with our recommendation, but like as Mr. Delzite mentioned, we would like to have all the facts in hand. Actually worked on the cost estimate this morning, so... we should have some information very soon as to whether or not our idea is feasible.
So. Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Next project, the Wilmar Stairs project. The Wilmar Stairs project is progressing. Design should be complete by mid-August, and construction is scheduled to start in the fall. The existing stairway that you see in the photo here is made entirely of wood. It's about 28 years old, and it's been continually repaired throughout its entire life, and it's now at the point where maintenance is no longer cost-effective. There's just not much else to bolt to anymore, unfortunately. So this will be another of the stairway projects we anticipate being a stainless steel structure with wooden treads. Any questions?
Nope.
Next project is the traffic signal override system. Been reminding you of this project from time to time. You haven't heard much happening, and that's because we have been delaying the installation of the in-vehicle devices. There's a device that actually goes in the emergency vehicles that causes the whole system to work. We've lost one staff member at the corporate yard in the vehicle division. With that lack of staffing out there, we were holding off waiting for that position to be filled. But at this point, I'm told by the public works supervisor that they're going to go ahead and contract that out to a company that does the installs. So we're expecting by the end of the month here to have the in-vehicle devices in place. At that time, the vendor who we bought the system from will come in and code these devices to operate, and then the emergency vehicles will be able to have priority at our signals throughout the city, which should reduce response times.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions?
Nope. Thank you.
The next project is the repaving of the corporate yard. And you'll notice this is a separate project, but we talked about it earlier. This project was, in fact, its own unique capital improvement project when this five-year CIP was approved. But it's been incorporated into the wastewater treatment plant project by change order, and most likely at a significant cost savings to the city. As I mentioned earlier, that this project in particular was delayed due to rain. We had quite a bit of rain after they removed the existing paving, and it became a fairly large mud puddle. But that should be done by late this month. That's the anticipated completion date.
Okay, thank you.
Next project is the Communication Systems Upgrade Project. Police department staff are working with engineering staff on design and bidding this project. We have identified a contract consultant to put together the project bidding documents. There were some significant access issues that delayed this project up until now, but apparently they have been resolved, and the police department has indicated that they're ready to resume work on this project. The main component of this project is a radio repeater site planned for installation at the top of the hill above El Portal Drive. That's the hill that separates us from Avila Beach, essentially. Any questions?
No. Thank you.
Promenade 4. Of course, you don't see the Promenade 4 here, just the design plans. This is a planned view of Promenade 4 as it will be constructed. This is a boardwalk structure. It will begin at Pier Plaza and end at a new pedestrian drop-off on Main Street. Pedestrian block drop-off will look very much like a cul-de-sac. The design is underway, along with the environmental process and procurement of a permit from the Coastal Commission. As of May, the city received 90% complete plans for review, and the city currently has approximately $1 million in grants, and additional grant requests have been made. Construction of the project is scheduled to occur after the tour season in October of this year.
And of course, we've got about 45 days left in this fiscal year, so George and I thought it would be appropriate to come to the council and tell you all where we are in expenditures and where we are in revenues to this point in time. So with that, I'd like to introduce George Eads, our Director of Finance and Admin Services. George.
Thank you, Mr. Rice, Mayor and Council Members. I'm going to try to do this presentation from this chair because I've got some tables here. I'd handled out just above at the top of your places some three additional tables which have been there were two pages of tables in the staff report, and these those two tables or two pages have been converted into three to get some larger numbers and that you can read, that people in the audience may be able to read.
Thank you. They're very legible. Thanks.
Hopefully. And with
I
some
appreciate
color
that.
So we'll try this. I may move this around a little bit.
Okay.
Zoom. I want to zoom this in a little more if I can. Yeah. I can get it just a little. Whoops, not quite that much. Back to there.
Is that a fire alarm, is it? Let us know if we have to evacuate.
You better come
back. Yeah.
In this report, this the primary purpose, as the city manager mentioned, this report provides an update on the financial outlook for the general fund for current fiscal year, FY06, and actually provides a little bit of a peek into next fiscal year, FY07. There are three pages on these tables. The first page is for fiscal 05, which was over about 10 months ago, but it was part of the sequence, and I just primarily wanted to show you on here that a couple of items real quick, and in the report I'm going to mention several highlights, but I'm going to bring out five key items that I think are particularly worth noting. Here I'm simply showing that whereas the November 28 update, which is the yellow column, that had about a $500,000 increase in the ending balance for fiscal 05, which we reported back in November. And that was because we had gotten the final results for fiscal 05 and were able to show that it was higher than expected revenues. But for this update, May 16 in the orange, no change from the November 28th. So I just wanted to make that point. And then a second smaller one is that for people who may not be familiar with accounting terminology, there are on this table near the bottom, the last two lines in effect, there's a line FY05 ending balance available as of June 30, and the numbers on that show $1,004,000 for was the budget and $1,908,000 for both the November 28 and the May 16 updates. And note that the ending balance for fiscal 05 is the same number. They're the same numbers as the beginning balance for fiscal 06.
And they should be.
Got it.
They should be, right.
Hopefully we have a
some people are not, sure what when we go from one year to another. But those are numbers that should be the same, exactly.
Right.
The second page is on fiscal 06. And here, again, the primary item here of interest is the numbers are really over in the right-hand column, the slightly green. This is the change from November 28 to May 16. And the first one is that we're expecting the revenues to come in at about $500,000 higher than we had projected.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to have a couple of percent higher. Actually, part of what that is the surge in TOT that we got at the end of last fiscal year was carried over into this fiscal year, and then some other things have been good. So that's good, and that's my item number one of particular note here. Then all just also showing on here that the ongoing expenses showing a small decline. That's a combination of some actually larger declines and a partially offset by some additional appropriations, the operating costs, which partially offsets that. But down at the bottom, I'm particularly pleased to see that the ending balance in the orange column, May 16, a little over $800,000. That's a significant improvement, $600,000, from what we were seeing back in the end of November. And that's my second key item to be attentive to is that larger ending balance of $816,000. The third that I wanted to bring up is that in the staff report, I comment about, while that certainly is an improved fiscal situation, I want to suggest caution about spending more money, approving maybe more than about $200,000 in additional expenses for next year, for a couple reasons. But a key one is, if on this third page we go up about five lines, and colored in orange is the number $288,000, that's a budgeted net loss from operations. That means we're spending more for operations than we have for revenue for the year, and that's not a sustainable situation. And that certainly means, well, you need to get your revenues higher than your operating costs, or else pretty soon your bottom line is going to go to zero and head south of that and begin working into the fiscal reserves.
Madam Mayor, if I may?
Yes.
Is that a good case for sales tax increase?
I would say that that is, very much so.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. And in part because while we may turn around the operating situation, this, and it comes around to my fifth point that I'll jump over to, and that is in the last page of the staff report. There's the pages from the five-year forecast, and in that we noted in particular that while the fiscal situation is improved, Let's note that this money does not provide any meaningful amount of funds for any significant capital projects. We're really not even able to do full maintenance, just to make sure that all of our facilities do not deteriorate. And so the additional point for the sales tax is the community's interest in the capital projects to actually improve our infrastructure that's funded by the general fund. So that's in essence the report.
Okay, is there any questions from the council?
No, just a good report. I'd like to, good George.
It is very good. And just to emphasize what you've said already, it's, you know, we're barely doing any maintenance at all, so which is a good reason to take a look at sales tax, because that will allow us to at least maintain what we have at a more suitable level, I think. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council and we'll go to the next item on our agenda, which is 6D.
D.
D is in dog.
Madam Mayor and Council, business item 6D is a resolution of the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach adopting the Pismo Creek Recreational Path Study Report. If you remember, about two, three months ago, Mr. Joe Bowd came before you and briefed at that time the proposal for the Pismo Creek Recreational Path Study, and there were some good comments from the audience, from the citizens at that time, and the council gave Randy Bloom some direction. So tonight we've come back, done some revisions, and with that I'd like to go ahead and ask Randy to give the staff report, and then I guess Joe will brief us.
That's correct. I'd like Joe to make a presentation. He's been our consultant on this project since the beginning, so at this point I'll turn it over to Joe. Thank you.
Good evening. Joe Bowd, Joseph Bowd Associates.
Can you speak into the mic a little bit closer? I think we're having trouble hearing staff.
Is that better?
Thank you.
We began this evaluation to develop some conceptual trail design alignments back in 2004. My firm, Joseph Bowden Associates, collectively with Firma, the way that process was, as you might recall, we evaluated, first of all, the county road alignments that had been acquired through the oil company properties, as well as the King Ranch, but pretty much followed along the existing old Pismo Creek roadbed. And then through the properties that are contained within the Price Canyon planning area, which was the King Ranch, as well as the Big Bird and PVB properties, to try to discern what would be the most logical route. In the resolution, the second paragraph should not read April 4th. It should be to this evening's date. And secondly, there's an incorrect reference that was a carryover from the county's bike trail standard, which speaks of about a 20-foot easement with the city of Pismo, as a general plan policy, requires a 25-foot easement width. So in several instances, that 20-foot is either just referring back to the county, but the city standard is 25. So if there's any confusion about the width of easement, the distances we're dealing with here is 25. One thing I want to pass out to you is a copy of the out of the general plan of the expected alignment of the trail that runs from the beach up to the highway. This in concept shows a creek trail that follows along the top of the bank, and that was the intent of the general plan. And in fact, some of the acquisitions and improvements that have been made along that top of bank are in place, and they do indeed follow the top of the bank. When this staff report was prepared, the illustration on your page 14, I think it is here. No. Page 13, it shows the blue line and the pathway running down Addy Street because of the fact that the property from adjacent to Cypress is basically in the lagoon. So it would run down the sidewalk, and then at the McDermott property, which is improved, would follow along the existing trail. And rather than following the back side of those lots that are identified as Atsco, Atsco, Collegian, Addy Street LTD, and Alfam, the creek actually does, as it shows in that general plan exhibit that I just passed out, it is quite a distance from those properties. And in fact, it would be on the bulk of that trail, or the easement acquisition area, would be on the neighboring property, which is the Pismos Coast Village property. So this doesn't completely depict very accurately, because as you can see, the scale of that general plan exhibit is such a large scale that this simply, the whole idea of identifying a pathway would provide the future development of those. Obviously, there would be survey, environmental review, and at that time, the location, precise location of the easement area and the pathway improvement would be identified. But in concept, it appears as though this exhibit on your page 13 doesn't quite show the real picture. It should have had the adjacent property as well, because it was determined later that the top of the bank of the creek is indeed on the neighboring property to the east, the Pismo Coast Village.
Coast. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Very briefly, the right-of-way north of Highway 101 would be a 25-foot right-of-way, easement, within an 8-foot paved area with 2-foot shoulders at a 10% grade mats. Now, this pretty much is lifted from the county standard for bikeway. Because of the comments made at the council meeting in January, we re-looked at the properties on the south side of Highway 101. That would be then through the vacant Connolly property, the condos that do have the improvement already in place. There is a development proposed that would be required to provide that easement to the south of that, the Haas property, and then through the Ira Lease Park, which has incorporated this trail design into the revised design for the park. Mary Harrington, it's going to have to divert itself from the Lions Club facility. And then because of the topography and the lagoon, it would follow Addy Street until it enters the McDermott property, and then along the creek bank, a portion of which would be the first two lots, but then it would become within that Pismo Coast Village property. And the comments received from the audience, staff discussed it, and we agree that it would be within a 25-foot easement, but it would be a 4-foot-wide surface, graveled, not paved, and it would be limited to pedestrian only, posted, no bicycles, no animals,
You're good.
Okay.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and members of the council. My name is Vaughn Collegian. I'm a resident of Fresno County, hope to be a resident of this county, and this is in regards to my property at 140 Addy Street. I have reviewed the Pismo Creek Recreation Pass study report, which you are considering this evening for adoption. I understand that the recreation path is intended to be located within a 25-foot wide series of easements over private property. I further understand that the easements and paths are expected to follow the top of the bank of Pismo Creek. My concern is that the exhibits contained in the study do not depict the top of the creek bank, and more alarming, depict a path as following the rear property lines of the Addy Street lots adjacent to the creek. My lot, as an example, is removed from the creek top of bank by a minimum of 35 feet and an average of 45 feet. With this information, I assume but would appreciate your confirmation that the easement and path would not impact my lot at all. I recommend that language be included in your resolution to confirm that the easement and path are intended to follow the top of the creek bank and not follow property lines as illustrated in the project. And so if you look at your report, you will see that it follows the edge of my property line, but if you see the document that I presented to you, it follows the creek line. And I just want to make sure that my understanding that it follows the creek line is correct.
Do you want to speak to that, Mr. Bowd?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we are on the understanding that the pathway was intended to be along the top of the bank of Pismo Creek. Now, where exactly that is, as it relates to not only the Kalugian property, but the other undeveloped properties, it's somewhat unknown without detailed survey work and so forth. But it was our intention and our understanding that the general plan expected that pathway to be developed along the top of the bank. Whether it falls on the Kalugian property or not, or others or not, is up to a future, if those properties develop, then at that point in time we'll have a survey conducted and we'll know, or the city will know, where that 25-foot easement should be acquired, and the improvements made by whom. But I'm in agreement with Mr. Collegian's interpretation of the general plan, and
okay.
We can adjust the resolution to recognize that if council feels that's necessary.
Okay. Does that meet
Sounds
your needs?
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
well,
could I ask Mr. Bowd then a question
sure.
about that? What has been taken into consideration with reference to a 100-year flood and erosion? Is this bluff going to be protected, or are we just going to gravel it, and if it goes away, it goes away?
That's my understanding of
which one?
the fact that it would be a minimum improvement that could disappear in a intensive storm situation and or high tidal surge, in which case it would have to be replaced. Not so much of a concern as the properties develop further north of Highway 101,
mm-hmm.
Being that they still would be in the 100-year floodplain.
Mm-hmm.
The improvement would be an asphalt one, similar to the Bob Jones Trail, which is has shown itself to be fairly secure
mm-hmm.
and maintained very beautifully, even when it was in flood just this last winter season.
Right, exactly. Okay. But I suppose that's a concern of you, too. I mean, a good friend of mine had a had a problem with that in a severe storm situation. Just took away his land. So, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there any other questions from any of the other council members? Okay, seeing none, is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item?
Yes, my name is Joe Crescioni. I'm at 1326 Costa Brava, and I have the other piece of property that abuts the creek. First of all, I have to tell you that I did not receive a notice of what was going to happen, and I didn't find out until actually a couple of days ago.
Package on page 13. The trail, because of the topography and situation on Mr. Crescioni's property, would follow the sidewalk until it enters the McDermott property, and then at that point it would follow the top of Creek Bank. The sidewalk essentially is the top of Creek Bank along that first 150-200 feet.
So where the existing sidewalk is where the trail is?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's part and parcel.
So there will not be a new area. It's the area that's there now.
No.
Is that making sense to you?
Now, we all know that this is what he said right now. My concern is that a new council, a new city attorney, and somebody else here 5, 6 years, 10 years from now will read this completely different. I want to be positive that that description is identified as to the words he said rather than loose with a 20-foot easement, because I can tell you right now what's going to happen is I'm going to be demanded to give away 25 feet of my property. Another planning commission, another council will do that. I can't trust the future. I want to be positive that it is on paper.
If the council feels more comfortable as to a description of the alignment, I would suggest that we lift a short paragraph from page 5, and I'll read that for the record. Third paragraph from the top. All three of those paragraphs would be pertinent. The Connolly property connect with the 25-foot wide easement and existing access on the condominium property, parallel the Groon through the Slow Haas property into Ira lease, and then cross Cyprus through Mary Harrington, cross Cyprus, follow the city sidewalk until it meets with the 10-foot wide existing and improved public access easements through lots 8, 9, and 10, parcel map 4516 McDermott. From this point, the trail would pass through either the easterly portions of lot 7 through 2, Atsco, Collegian, Addy Street, LTD, and Alfam, or the westerly portion of the Pismo Coast Village property that straddles both sides of the creek and terminate in the beach. The reason I say that is it's unknown exactly where those property boundaries are located relative to the top of the bank where the creek trail would be proposed. And then at that vicinity, it would connect to the beach boardwalk system that follows the beach to the pier.
Mr. Crescioni, does that alleviate your concern?
I'm not sure that I followed the or section too closely because...
I'll repeat it. The pertinent section to the Crescioni property would be, at this point, it would cross Cypress Street, and it would be necessary for the trail to follow the city sidewalk until it meets with the 10-foot-wide existing and improved public access easement through lots, McDermott lots. So it makes it crystal clear that the easement or the improvement would not require easement. It would simply follow the city sidewalk through your property and those three other properties that happen to be owned by McDermott.
Okay. What you just said is precisely what has been the understanding for the last 15 years that I'm aware of. Now, if that can be placed on the record and on the paper, I'm for that.
Okay. We can manage that, right? Okay. Thank you.
I can answer Mr. Crescioni's other question is, we did send out public notices. However, we pulled it from the county database, and the address that we have for Mr. Crescioni is his old Spyglass Drive address.
That's too bad that happens continually. It's just...
But that's those county current data.
I hear you. Okay, Mr. Collegian, usually I don't allow this, but I am going to allow you to do this.
And I appreciate that, and it's only because of one word I heard. And because it's for clarification, if I can address Mr. Boog, please. Joe, you said that you used or. On the third paragraph, you said through the easterly portion of lots.
It does include them. It should say that. Until that's a survey that's conducted and that 25 foot from the top of the bank has been identified. It could include several of those lots. It could exclude several of those lots. At this point, it doesn't appear as though it includes any of Mr. Collegian's property. But then again, this was an exhibit that was presented just this evening without a surveyor's stamp. Sure. And I'm a little hesitant to have the council commit to that exhibit as fact when a survey would be conducted in the future, when and if this particular segment of trail system was improved on the ground.
I agree.
Okay, I can understand what you're saying. So you're saying it's just...
Let's leave our options open.
May I comment, Madam Mayor? I understand and agree that the topography of this property and the creek path has not been formally determined. All I'm not asking if it ends up on the property, fine. All I'm saying is that it state, though, that the priority of the route is adjacent to the creek. Now, wherever that ends up, I can live with that, but not on the edge of the property or the line of the creek. That or is not correct, mm-hmm. because your plan calls for it to be to follow that Y of the creek, not, well, we have a choice down the road. We can go straight as it shows in the map, or we can Y it to the south, and that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay. I understand perfectly, and I will project that to Mr. Bowden. Is there a way to word that so that there's a preference word or something, a preference?
I'm coming up with something here.
I know we're asking you to do this right on the scene here, but I think we could probably resolve that concern fairly quickly with some right verbiage. So, well, if
I
he's
think
doing
we can
that,
probably satisfy everyone's concerns here. If we go back to resolution,
okay.
Page 15. Yes.
Okay.
Under the section where 1.3 sub B, trail design standards for properties south of Highway 101. If we simply say to minimize impacts and maximize the compatibility of a trail to existing and future developments, blah, 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 it is recommended that the trail for this area be constructed along the top of the creek bank within a 25-foot easement and its use limited as follows. Okay, and then it talks about the improvement
Perfect.
Standards.
There
but
you go.
We ought to also, as Mr. Crescioni pointed out, include perhaps another sentence that would simply state that the alignment from Cypress Street would follow the city sidewalk until it meets with the 10-foot wide easement and improved public access easement through lots 8, 9, and 10 of parcel map 4516.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Your input's well taken. Thank you. Do we have any other public that would like to speak to us on this item?
Thank you. Yes, Mayor. Merrill Lee Hyman, 2141 Shoreline Drive. This is a lovely plan. It's taken a lot of effort to make a nice mile-and-a-half walk that will go from the beach all the way up along the creek, the edge of the creek, to Price House Memorial Park. Page 5 and 6 of the report, the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Committee noted that there would have to be a reexamination of the trail because of the unintended consequence of losing the Price Street extension. So instead of going along the creek at that point, there has to be a jog away from the creek to get to the other side of 101. I've seen a map, but I'm not clear of exactly what that all looks like in that jog away and up and over. It's not direct route. It's indirect. What efforts has the plan, the people who are planning this, made to make this jog away from the creek a lovely creek trail experience? Or is this going to be an urban experience trying to get over back to the creek?
Unfortunately,
Mr. Brown, through me, would you answer that question?
Yes, no, I'd be more than pleased to. The question is, what happens on properties from the south of 101 when the Creek Trail is at this 101 impasse? Yes, it would have.
So we're just receiving this information at this point. I think we did a good job of answering the public's questions, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, you did a good
job.
So
don't we want a motion? Yes, we want to. This is, we were asking for a roll call vote.
That's right.
And to adopt it.
I'll make the motion to adopt the resolution with the noted changes.
Second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to adopt the amended resolution. And does the clerk feel confident in the changes that were made? Is there any further explanation that you would need?
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'd like to go ahead and take the vote then. Councilmember Natoli?
No, you made it. Oh. Yes. Are you just going right down the line? Right?
Usually the motion maker is the one that you ask first, but that's okay.
Well, he's
technicality.
Okay.
He's sorry. Then I'd like Councilmember Higginbotham.
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli.
Yes.
Councilmember Revenal.
Yes.
And Mayor Reese.
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you very much. Good staff report.
01.
Yep. Appreciate the nice working report. With us on that. Okay, the last item on our agenda is 6E, Mr. City Manager.
Madam Mayor and Council, item 6E is a resolution of the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach declaring its opposition to U.S. Senate Bill number 1955. This is what we're asking you all to do tonight. Currently pending in the U.S. Congress is a bill, Senate Bill 1955, which is also known as the Health Insurance Marketplace Modernization and Affordability Act. This act would result in millions of diabetes sufferers to lose existing health coverage protections in addition to small business health plans. All state-regulated health insurance, such as individual policies, would also lose their guarantee of required coverage of life-saving diabetes items. Currently, there's about 20.8 million Americans who have diabetes, and that number is growing at 8% each year. It's obviously a serious disease. The vast majority of state legislatures have, till now, recognized the importance of guaranteeing coverage for diabetes supplies in education and have thus passed laws that provide this coverage to residents in state-regulated health plans. This current bill, as written in the U.S. Senate, would affect not only small business health plans, but the entire state-regulated health insurance market, including individual health insurance policies and small group health plans. Under the proposed legislation, all people with diabetes covered under state-regulated health insurance plans would be in jeopardy of losing their diabetes coverage protections. Furthermore, the bill is currently written. The proposal takes away the right of states, each state, so it's a states' rights issue also, to govern health plans and to determine important health care coverage that the residents should be able to receive for people with diabetes. So there's really two issues with this Senate bill. One is sort of a compassionate issue. It would affect some 20-plus million Americans with the diabetes coverage that they currently have in their health plans. And it also would impose the federal will over the states. Currently, most states have the right to regulate insurance within their state, and this would preempt that right to a degree. Mm-hmm. So what we're asking tonight is if you would adopt this resolution, and if you would, then we would forward it to our two state senators, Boxer and Feinstein, and Congresswoman Capps, and also to the League of California Cities. And I think Councilmember Natoli might like to say something also on this.
Yeah, Alex Padilla, who's the president of the league for this year, he's pretty he's real high on this. He does have diabetes in the family, and I think that everybody in the state or in the country actually has some member, some relative that's afflicted with diabetes. So this is a very important issue for us to really jump on and try to support this. So we've got to get this letter written and sent out to Barbara Boxer and the rest of the Diane Feinstein and, of course, CAPS, and let them know how we feel about this. So
I'll support you on that, Ray.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is mm-hmm. there any questions or comments? I think you have our support on this. But I will go out to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council for action.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it.
Reapprove it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to...
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay.
I was second. Rudy, okay. Mm-hmm. Obispo and the police chief and the city manager have been visiting all of the groups over there as well. It's very appropriate.
Yeah.
But I thank you for your asking, actually. You're welcome.
Okay, and that's the only thing that you have? That's the end of your report?
That's it. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, city attorney's report.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. As I included in an email to you on the Denny's case, I did want to let the council know publicly that the temporary restraining order preventing release of the videotape has been extended to August 2nd, at which time the court is going to hear further argument from all the parties. As you're aware, the Tribune intervened in the litigation or attempted to intervene at that point. And we're working now on, the Tribune and Denny's are really going to be fighting it out. We're kind of the stakeholder still at this point, although we do have to appear in the case. But that's the current status. I will be talking with the attorneys for Denny's and the Tribune on the 18th about a briefing schedule. And we should have all our papers in by the end of July for that August hearing date. But we're precluded from releasing that videotape until at least August 2nd.
Madam Mayor, may I ask him just one quick?
Yes.
Is it the Tribune locally that's doing that, or is it this new McCloskey group or whoever? Who is pursuing this?
My understanding is that it's a local decision, that the sale to McClatchy Newspapers has not been completed. We did have some discussion among the attorneys as to who the entity was that should be bringing the lawsuit, because the papers were filed under the name The Tribune. Currently, the owner of The Tribune is Knight Ritter Incorporated, as far as we can tell. So we asked that whoever the appropriate party to be bringing this lawsuit is, that they file a pleading indicating that. So at this point, it appears to me to be a local decision. Editor Sandra Dewar was present at the court hearing. I spoke with her in the presence of her attorney a little bit about the proceedings. So it indicated to me, and some of the things they said in court, is that it was a local decision. One of the things that made it a little bit problematic is they filed their papers Monday night. The hearing was Wednesday night of last week. I got them Tuesday evening about 6 o'clock from FedEx and had to respond to about 40 or 50 pages worth of stuff by the next morning.
Wow.
If they had filed their papers a little bit more timely, we might not have even had to show up at court, because we probably could have agreed to a briefing schedule. The issues, very important issues all the way around. The judge is taking a very careful look at everything and really establishing a good record, and he brought up some issues that none of the parties had considered and asked for some briefing on those issues. So we'll be addressing those. I should say we. I use that in the greater sense of the word. I expect Denny's and the Tribune to be taking the laboring oar on this type of thing, but because of the city's approach on this and the city's interest, I do need to appear on that. So.
Well, good. I'm hopeful it'll bankrupt the Tribune.
But I noticed that today they're releasing all those pictures from 9/11, which means that the media won on the First Amendment rights, I guess.
Yeah, that was actually a videotape from the Pentagon security camera showing one of the airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the videotape. They're actually similar to what we're looking at Denny's. They're still pictures, but close enough together where it sort of looks like video motion. But that was brought by an organization called Judicial Watch, and they brought it under the Freedom of Information Act. We're dealing with the California
property.
Yeah, we're dealing with the California Public Records Act. The interests, or at least the law established, is similar, although California has a constitutional right of privacy explicitly set forth in Article 1. The federal constitution doesn't have that. It's basically established by case law. So that's really the issue, or one of the issues that we're going to be arguing about in the case, is whether or not the privacy interests of those affected by the incident at Denny's trump the public's interest in seeing that video. And that's going to be the balancing test that we'll probably be wrestling with.
Thank you. Is that all you have?
Yes, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Council subcommittee reports. Does anyone have anything?
I have a Zone 3 meeting in these chambers tomorrow night at 6:30. Going to be some real important issues, certainly involving the RHCP, our habitat. What did I say, tomorrow night? Yep, I didn't mean tomorrow night. I meant Thursday night.
Thursday.
That'll be the 18th. 6:30. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay. Is there anyone have anything else?
Yeah, I'm taking over the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I'm stepping in place of Harry Ovett. I'll be president, and Jerry Lenthal will be my vice president on that board.
Good luck.
Okay. Congratulations.